Views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. Without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She is at work right now, and I am recording at a really strange time, but it will be Oz Normal tomorrow on WHUS Radio. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can leave a comment right down here below on my Facebook Live page, or you can also just drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, Ron's Rant of the Week. Is there ever a good time for jury duty? Really? Yeah, I got called to jury duty. Federal court, big time. I'm in conversation, sort of, because they don't like to talk to you right now about maybe not being on jury duty. But, you know, we got to try to work this thing out, because if I am, I won't see you guys for a couple of weeks, because the trial supposedly goes for a couple of weeks. So, I don't know, more next week. Or maybe not. That's just kind of the way it goes. If I am not available to do this, then we will listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Okay, what else do I got here on the rant page? And did you know the U.S. has 7 parking spaces for every car? How many parking spaces do they have for bikes? Anyway, that is definitely a thing. It often eliminates the arbitrary minimum parking requirements and opens up parking spaces for more housing, but there's often a backlash in cities that have eliminated them. So, yeah, that's where we're at. You know, it's much more important to have places to park your car than it is to have places for people to live and or ride their bicycles. You gotta love it. Ron's Rant of the Week. That's what it is. Hey, another little rant in here. California wildfires hit the trails, homes, and shops. Yeah. The LA wildfires have been nasty on folks in the bicycle business. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that if we have time later on in the show. And moving on to the positive side. Speaking of California Bicycle Coalition, there's new studies that show no downsides for bicycle safety stop, otherwise known as the Idaho stop. As more states continue to pass laws allowing bike riders to treat stop signs like yield signs, more studies showing their safety benefits accumulate. More in the show. The Boston Globe has an article about educating drivers to cyclists' rights to the road. Yay, Boston Globe. Good, good. And it's working. The initial data show congestion pricing has stemmed the tide of years of increasing traffic. Congestion pricing in New York, you know, I've been talking about this off and on for the last year. It was going to go through. No, it wasn't going to go through. Yeah, it was going to go through. And it went through. Hey, what do you know? So there is congestion pricing now in Manhattan, in New York City, which is a huge boom to cyclists, because less cars on the street mean less people getting hit by cars on the street. We hope. We should hope, right? So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that. That was in Streets Blog this past couple of days, so we will get into that too. And I'll talk about it more in the show. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips for the Week. Remember back just before, just around the turn of the year, I talked about the top 10 cycling innovations that weren't like the others in 2024. Well, I'm going to go through all of these, or at least a number of them that are relevant. And so I've got a new one for you today, if I can just find my screen here and figure it out. So anyway, this has got to go away. So what we have is, this is, you know, there's a genius born every minute. There really is. So we all have cycling shoes, right? Well, maybe we don't all have cycling shoes. Maybe a lot of people don't have them. So, but there's an awful lot of bikes out there with clipless pedals. Guess what? Somebody made a plug-and-play wearable clip that clips onto, with Velcro, everyday shoes and turns everyday shoes into clipless pedals. That is a clever idea. Totally clever idea. So if you're wearing your we'll call it, I think back in the days of athletics in high school, the coaches used to call them your street shoes, right? Street shoes weren't your sneakers, right? So you're wearing your street shoes to work and you need to ride your bike to work and you figure out a way to get there and commute and not get too sweaty or, you know, whatever. You have a shower at work, whatever it is, who knows. But you don't have to go that far, but you want to ride your bike and you want to clip in. And guess what? Somebody made a lovely thing, a German company called Clip Clap. Clip Clap, that's it, Clip Clap, looks to offer everyday cyclists a way of getting those clipless cleats off ASAP, a welcome alternative to hobbling around town uncomfortable bike shoes. You could also put these on to running shoes, tennis shoes, sneakers, whatever you want to call them. You can put them on something like that, but you can put them right onto your shoes. They're really cool. They've got these big Velcro straps, and they wrap around the top of the shoe, and they come in at an angle from around the right where the ball your foot is, and hopefully that will keep them from sliding off, and they'll stay on nice and snug, and then you can just wear your regular shoes, so you don't have to worry about clipping in with your bike shoes. I'm so intrigued by them that there may be a pair of these in my future because they just look really, really cool. And I just thought they were kind of a neat idea. So Clip Clap advertises its adapters for everything from long distance touring to technical mountain biking. But to us, the interviewer, the technical mountain biking, the value proposition really comes to life related to urban commuting. Absolutely. This is definitely a commutable item. The Clip Clap adapters let you ride with regular sneakers or dress shoes. Simply strap them snugly around the outside of the shoe, secure the Velcro closure, and clip into the pedal using the cleat on the underside of the base plate. What a brilliant idea. Just really, really clever and smart. And, you know, obviously you can use different types of shoes and cleats for this as far as, or I should say, pedals and cleats for this. I would probably still recommend something more in the mountain bike, walkable, wearable kind of thing because they are set as a recess on the bottom on some of these. And they will... they have two versions, basically a two-hole Explorer model for mountain bike and gravel bikes and a three-hole variant for road bikes. So you can get them for either style of cleat. But anyway, I just think they're clever. They're clever. So Shimano Look, Expedo, Magped, and more pedals will be able to be used with these. I think there's a couple of European brands on there that I am not familiar with. But anyway, they're not necessarily ultralight, okay? They're 11.3 ounces, but they're certainly lighter and more compact than a separate pair of shoes, and storing easily in either your backpack or your pocket. You can just put them on when you need to put them on, take them off when you need to take them off. They're really, really clever. I will try to put a link on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. So if you want to check it out, you can check this thing out. But I just thought these were like actually one of those innovations that, why didn't I think of that? Yeah, we do that a lot. I've always kicked myself for looking at an idea that pops out that I did think about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, and never followed through on it. And now someone has followed through, and there it is. So clip clap. One side says clip, the other one says clap. It's very clever. Big, wide Velcro strap. Lots of pull around from the front and the back of the unit that fits on your shoe, so it won't slide off or slide forward or back. It's really, really clever the way it's done. So yeah, if you go to Clip Clap, I'm sure there is a site here. You're gonna clip me in there. Let's just click on this and see what happens. And if you go there, you're going to see they have a complete site, of course, and it is in German, so you will have to have it translated over so you can watch and so you can see it in English. But it'll show you all of the interesting things that you can do with these. So it's clipclap.cc. That's what you're looking for. Check it out. I think you'll think they're rather interesting. So that's part of Ron's tip of the week. New clever gadget that you can get that will convert your regular old street shoe. Maybe even, hey, here's a good one. This time of year, we all complain about the agony of defeat, right? The cold toes. And cold toes can be resolved if you either put a flat pedal on your bike and wear a pair of nice insulated hiking boots, or you could put one of these on and still use the same boots, and then you could clip in. I think that this is going to get a major thumbs up here, or a tip of the cycling cap from Pedalin' Ron, because I think this is a very, very clever idea. I think we got onto something here. So anyway, there are a bunch of images you can look at here, and you can kind of check it all out. I think it's cute. I think it's going to work. So that is it there. Let's move on into the show. Okay, gonna focus a lot on advocacy today. Gonna focus a lot on the California wildfires because they're kind of all over the news. I feel really bad for those folks out in California that are dealing with this. The bicycle retailing industry news has had a lot of stories on it, and here comes one of them. We're gonna pop on in here. It's really difficult to assess the damage to the bicycle industry from the Los Angeles area wildfires that broke out in this past week, but the damage is sure to be significant. Social media reports show several bike shops have been damaged or destroyed, while two former editors of Mountain Bike Action magazine each lost their homes. Those familiar with the area say that many mountain bike trails are likely burned and the retail industry will be affected for months, if not years. Altadena retailer Steve Lubansky appeared on KCAL TV News describing the damage to his store, Open Road Bicycle Shop, and the adjacent Bunny Museum that Lubansky runs with his wife. "It's gone," he said to the reporter. He said on social media that he planned to retire from the bike industry. However, friends have set up a GoFundMe to help rebuild the Bunny Museum. Another Altadena store, Steve's Bike Shop, was destroyed in the fire. Supporters have set up a GoFundMe campaign for the shop, and you can I can't really link these right now, so I'm not going to do that, but you could probably find these even going to Bicycle Retailer and Industry News, and you might be able to pull it off of there. So there's lots of friends that have set up crowdfunding campaigns to help industry. Look at this. Industry journalist Zapata Espinoso and his daughter, Zap, as everyone knew him back in the mountain bike days. A friend of many, Zap has been a staple in the motocross and bicycle industry for more than 30 years. And right now, he could use our help getting him back on his feet after his devastating loss. And he quotes here, "Zap would never ask for help for himself, but if you are in a position to contribute, he would be incredibly grateful for the financial support." So if you enjoyed Mountain Bike Action over the years and you'd like to help this guy out, it'd be a good cause. There's so many people that need help in Southern California right now. The fires are devastating. They've just done a tremendous amount of damage. And even... Let's see, another former editor, Mike Wirth, also lost his home to the fire. So there's also a GoFundMe set up for him. Retailer Daniel Farahard owns Just Ride LA, a bike. Just Ride LA, a bike shop, and Just Foil Los Angeles, an electric hydrofoil and foiling school in Los Angeles. So they've also been damaged from all this. It's really, really sad. There's pictures of charred bicycles, you know, of all things. Very, very sad. And even more so, anyone who lost friends or family in this, that's really pretty terrible. So, the California wildfires are a big deal right now. A very, very big deal. And, you know, LA is burning, as we know. It has been burning for a while. Just a number of effects that have done that. But there's a report here from a store owner's Wild Week and the LA fires. And he was in Altadena, California, of course, and right in the middle of everything. 40 years of bike shop. And he pulled two treasured bike tools from the ashes that were still hot as hell, said Steve Salinas, as he found himself outside his brother's home at the edge of the San Gabriel Mountains with a hose in his hand. He figured that he was probably going to be okay, but because he had a brick structure and he was helping out his friends and his neighbors at home, trying to keep them safe and keep the fires away from their houses. And of course, then he heard the report and he found out that the fire had come to take over his bicycle shop and just completely gutted it and left nothing but the brick walls. And that was it. So it's really sad. This guy's house was in Pasadena and he had to be evacuated, but he wasn't affected by the fire. So he still has his home, but his shop is definitely not there. Wednesday morning, he was spraying down the roof of a home of a friend who owns a hardware store that's next door to the bike shop, spraying down that roof and a neighbor's. And LA Times photographer took a photo of him, appeared on the cover of the paper. He took a silly selfie and chatted. At that time, Salinas didn't think his store, a brick building off a busy street more than a mile south of the Angeles National Forest boundary, was in danger. But soon after the photographer took the picture, he got a call from someone telling him his store was likely gone. And there is a very sad picture here of that store. It's pretty much gone. It's gone and everything in it is completely destroyed. And this is the real deal, folks. This is why we need to ride our bicycles more and drive our fossil fuel vehicles less. Because the fossil fuel industry has not been kind to our environment and we are having issues with our global climate change, and people are losing their livelihoods, their homes, their lives because of these things. So everything can be changed as soon as we teach everybody to ride their bicycle instead. I know I'm just, you know, I'm that guy who's up on that, you know, soapbox all the time talking about bicycles and bicycle advocacy, but this is something that it may not have been able to be avoided, but it could have been avoided if we had simply paid attention to this 50 or 60 years ago. Unfortunately, we are very much the victims of the advertising that is out there and the peer pressure that is out there that make us do things, but guide us towards doing things that are not always the smartest thing to do. So anyway, ride your bike. Please ride your bike. Bikes are good. Bikes are really good. They're good for us. They're good for the environment. They're good for your physical fitness. They're great for your health. There's just a whole bunch of reasons why bicycles could change the world. And you will hear me talk about that all day long, because that's why I started Bicycle Talk in the first place, to convey the message, so to speak. Maybe, just maybe, all I have to do is get one person excited, and maybe that person will get another person excited, maybe that person another person excited, and before you know it, the revolution will begin. Or, as we call it at the gym this time of year, the resolution. Viva la resolution. Yeah, we have a lot of people coming into the gym right now, signing up for classes and staying out of the cold, which we certainly have a lot of cold here. We definitely got a pile of that at the moment. We are definitely working with lots of cold air coming down out of Canada. And it's, not so great for riding outside. Get a couple days here and there, but most of the time, it's not so good. We are somehow blessed with no snow, or if that is a blessing. I kind of like having the snow, actually. Kind of cleans things up real nice, makes everything nice and white and bright and pure outside. And also, you can play in the snow when there's snow, but we're just not getting the winters we used to get. Going back to that global climate change thing, it seems to have made a big effect on southern New England, at least. Although I know people up in northern New England who are also complaining that there's no snow right now. So, and that's tough because there's ski industry up there. So, they kind of rely on it this time of year. But anyway, moving forward, we're probably going to end up at some point having a relatively mild winter, although it's not too mild at the moment. There was a morning a couple of weeks ago where I looked at the thermometer and there were no degrees on it. So that those things happen. And I'm not talking Celsius, folks. I'm talking Fahrenheit. So we're talking real cold out. So we have had some really, really cold days. No question about that. But it's, it's winter in New England. This is what we get. It happens. It totally happens. Let's jump back here to what I was talking about earlier of some of the things that are going on. Let's see, a California Bicycle Coalition. Where the heck is that one? That one was kind of interesting. So this came out of Streets Blog, and this is a new studies showing there is no downside for the bicycle safety stop, also known as the Idaho stop. So the Idaho stop has been around for a long time. If you're not familiar with it, Idaho is, because they've been doing this for decades. It was passed in 1982, where people on bikes have been treating stop signs as yields without any negative effects on traffic safety. As more states continue to pass similar laws, studies showing the benefits of bicycle stop as yield or bicycle safety stop accumulate. The latest is a pair of studies demonstrating that drivers and bike riders can easily and safely navigate intersections where people on bikes treat stop signs as yield signs, and that perception of the safety stop is positive or neutral, even among car driving population. So the first study was headed by researchers from the Oregon State University, and it placed participants in a simulator that had bike riders and car drivers navigating intersections where people on bikes were allowed to treat stop signs as yields. The study found no unsafe behavior from the bike riders and no difficulties in sharing the road for those operating motor vehicles. The study concluded that stop as yield laws would work better if states included information about them in driver handbooks, something even Idaho does not do. The authors recommend more education and outreach so road users in all modes understand stop as yield for bike riders. Of course, many people in cars also roll through stop signs, and when there are no other vehicles present, this is common and logical behavior for all road users, though it carries different risks for people operating two-ton machines. For bike riders, stop as yield is essential for efficient riding because it conserves the momentum that you lose when starting after coming to a complete stop. The first study also found that the bike riders speeding through intersection was higher on the average when using the rolling stop, which can augment safety. This confirms other studies, such as one showing the conflicts between bike riders and car drivers at intersections went down 23% after the introduction of the Idaho stop yield law in Delaware. Nice, huh? 23%. That's incredible. Why? Because the bike is always moving. And once you start taking on that, here's the big issue with the intersection. You come to a stop at an intersection. And if you did not prepare for making that right-hand turn at the intersection and you still wanted to go straight, the driver of the car has no idea. Okay? They assume that you're going right with them. If you've already gone right because you didn't have to stop, you're no longer questioning the driver of the motorized vehicle as to what is this guy going to do? What is this girl going to do? She's just sitting there on the side. Is she going to turn with me? Is she going to go straight forward? What do I have to, you know, you take all that anxiety away from the driver of the motorized vehicle. So it makes a lot more sense. Down 23%. That's a big number. That's a really big number. The second study is literature reviewed by the researchers from Gonzaga University in Washington State, the University of Idaho, Oregon State University, all states with stop as yield laws. The research looked at surveys of public opinions as well as expert input on intersection safety. One data point that jumps out is the Idaho study of several of road users in all modes about why they broke traffic rules. Among bike riders, 95.9% reported breaking a traffic law. Aren't we good? But 97.9% of pedestrians and 99.97% of drivers said they did. So the cyclists were actually at 95% were actually the more law-abiding of all three categories. How about that? The most common reason for flouting the law among drivers, 85%, and pedestrians, 71%, was saving time. However, people on bikes most commonly skirted traffic regulations for their own safety, 71%. This data highlights the inaccuracy of perceptions among an unfriendly segment of the driving public that bike riders are law-breaking road anarchists. We're the safest ones out there, according to this. Again, this study finds a need for better public education so people driving and biking can share road safety. So what did happen with the California bicycle safety stop? Cal Bike has been heavily involved in campaigning for laws to legalize the bicycle stop as yield over the past several years, and they haven't given up on this important advancement in bicycle safety. Unfortunately, it looks unlike they'll find a champion for this bill in the legislature this year. The current panic about e-bike safety, spurred on by the prolific electric motorcycle illegally sold as e-bikes, makes the bicycle safety stop much less likely to garner attention and support. And we may need to wait for a new governor, since Gavin Newsom has vetoed a bicycle safety stop bill in the past and seems unlikely to approve one in the future. Hey, I have an idea. You know how bills work, and you know somebody wants to get something to go through, so they attach one thing onto another thing? Just attach it onto the e-bike. Onto the e-bike thing. If the e-bike thing is such a hot thing, it's such a hot subject, just attach it on there. And then, you know, they're really trying to push to get this e-bike thing through, and then the yield on stop will go through too. But you know, I'm just a casual observer of politics from outside looking in. That's all. Cal Bike has heard from advocates in Nevada who are working on a bill to legalize the stop yield this year. And good luck to Nevada. Hopefully it'll work out. And the more states that adopt this sensible regulation, the greater the evidence becomes that it improves street safety rather than impairing it. We really hope that California will join its neighbors in enacting this legislation in the near future. I mean, they're doing it north of you. Figure it out. You guys can do this. Bicycles, California, it's a no-brainer. You know, there's tons of bicycles in California. They have the weather for it. They have the mentality for it. They have a culture in California with bicycles. It seems foolish of them to not pass through this legislation. But anyway, Gavin Newsom's got a bunch of other stuff on his hands right now, and those California wildfires aren't helping a whole lot here. But anyway, that's what's going on. I think it's a great thing. There are some comments here. This is a downside. Allowing bicycles to safety roll through a stop sign gives cyclists an advantage. Motorists are used to having all the advantages on the road, so even a little advantage given to the other road users will upset motorists, increasing anti-bike whining and moaning. I have a comment. What if you're driving that motorized vehicle, you're in a whole lot of traffic, you're stuck inside your little metal box, or maybe your gigantic metal box these days, and you see the cyclists rolling through the stop signs because they can, and they keep moving forward, and you are stuck. And then maybe, just maybe, you might catch up to them later on down the road and realize that they got a little bit further ahead of you than, you know, you did by just sitting there. Or maybe even better, they got to where they were going before you did. Maybe that would put in your brain, instead of being angry with the cyclist who's turning through the stop sign, you'd go, hey, maybe I should ride my bike instead. I try to look at things in a very positive way here, folks. I really do. I know I'm all ranty sometimes, but this could be a really good turn for the best if you take a look at it. So anyway, I'm just checking my time here. I've got a recording issue here again this week, so I'm recording off another computer, and I don't have it in my pure sight. So anyway, I say everybody should just pass this law. There's nothing that I can see that's horribly unsafe about it. Most of us do it anyway. We look first. We don't just pull out into traffic. That's not the right way to do it. You do have to use your noggin up here. You know, the thing you put that nice helmet on to keep it from getting damaged, keep the noggin from getting damaged. If you use that and you use it properly and you think in a courteous fashion when you're riding your bike, you can very safely roll through a lot of intersections without having to stop. Now, we are talking about right-hand turns only, by the way. We're not talking about left-hand turns. Left-hand turns are a lot trickier, and I don't think it applies on left-hand turns. But right-hand turns, oh, sorry, you folks in the UK, by the way. I know you drive on the other side of the road, so that's too confusing for me. Anyway, but here in the U.S., we are on the right lane when we're using our vehicles, whether they be motorized or not. And so a right-hand turn on a stop sign when no one's coming makes a whole lot of sense. The other thing that makes a lot of sense is that momentum thing that was talked about earlier. Once you've got yourself up to speed, and if you're able to continue to maintain that speed because you didn't have to stop at the stop sign, then it makes your journey a lot easier, a lot less effort is put out. It's certainly going to move you further down the road at a faster rate. Not that speed matters in any way, but to be able to keep consistently moving, not having to stop and start, and have your legs get all tight when you stop, and then have to start back up again, it just makes a lot of sense. So big believer in the Idaho stop here. I think it's good. I've talked about it numerous times on this show. And if you are in a place or a situation where you can bring it up in front of those that matter, then do that. Do that. Suggest it. Why not do an Idaho stop in, let's say, Storrs, Connecticut, up at the University of Connecticut? That might be an interesting little experiment. Maybe I should introduce that. Anyway, good idea. Definitely a good idea. So good luck, California. I sure hope it works for you because, you know, You got a lot of things going on right now, and it's a whole lot easier getting around on a bicycle than it is in your burnt-out automobile from your wildfire. Ugh, ick, ouch. So the Boston Globe put out a little article here, and it says, having trouble understanding the rules of the road for cyclists? Drivers, this is the guide for you. This article was written in January of 2025, January 12th, 2025, and it was an article to inform drivers of motorized vehicles about sharing the road with cyclists, basically understanding the rules of the road for cyclists. Now, Massachusetts is very progressive. It's coming around. It's definitely better than it used to be. I have a lot of friends who live up in the Boston area that are cyclists. I don't know any of them who have not been hit by a car while riding their bicycles. That's kind of a sad story, but it is the truth. And so it needed improvement, let's say. Definitely needed improvement. So there are now more bike lanes and ones that are actually protected now than there used to be, rather than the toilet paper sharrows in the road. That one comes from my friend Tony Chirolis, by the way. The toilet paper of bicycle safety, sharrows. So I can't take credit for that, but it is very funny, and yet not funny at all. So those that get behind the wheel, you probably just don't understand it completely, because as I have done when I've made presentations to car-friendly societies that are now thinking of introducing a more bicycle-friendly environment to their town or their area, I'm very, very quick to introduce myself as a guy who sees things from the handlebars of a bicycle, not from the windshield of a car. And I tell them I drive a car, and I know what it's like to see things from the windshield of a car. And I know that when I get in a car, I am almost always looking for nothing else except for another car, because that's how you can safely drive down the road. But because I'm a cyclist, I am also aware of pedestrians and cyclists and crosswalks and all the other things that are propelling people in a non-internal combustion way. And now we have to worry about electric way, because there are some of us who have electric cars now. But anyway, all those markings on the road, a lot of people don't understand what they mean. They see share the road, and they think that sign was put up for the cyclist to pay attention because there's cars on the road. And sort of, but not really, the intention was really the other way around. And a lot of people don't understand that until someone like me has a conversation with them. And I say, those share the road signs, those were actually really, they were put up for the cars, not for the bicycles. And they look at me and go, oh no, those are for the bikes. That's why they have a picture of a bike on them. Well, there are some friendlier suggested signs up now, and hopefully they will be a little less point blank at it being the cyclist's fault. And anyway, the bicycles have a right to be on the road. They're vehicles. As long as they are a vehicle, as long as the roads are made for vehicles, then guess what? Bicycles belong there too. So these are definitely things for us to think about and consider. So the goal of this guide that was actually made for Boston and Cambridge is to help make changes a bit easier to grasp, and hopefully the roads will be safer for all. Keeping reading tips for cyclists and helpful graphics and more useful information out there. So two longtime bicycle safety advocates in Boston, Galen Mook. Hey, I remember Galen. He used to work at a bike shop in Boston that I used to call on. He is the executive director of Mass Bike, and Peter Chung, a vice president of Boston Cyclists Union, provide insights about some of the most dangerous scenarios that drivers and cyclists are likely to encounter and how to navigate them safely. We don't want to impede their traffic, Chung said. We just want to get home safely. Yep, that's all true. That's all any of us really want. People make mistakes, Mook added. When mistakes happen, what can we do to make sure that people don't die out there on the roads? Now, Boston is an intriguing place on a bicycle, I will say. It is very busy, very large, very populated, and lots of people in a hurry to go places. I'm not going to make any terrible comments about the Massachusetts drivers, but I do find their level of aggression tends to be a little bit higher than some states. That's all I'm going to say. I guess that's a kind way of putting it, politically kind way of putting it. We're not much better in Connecticut, I can tell you that. We are, I think we are some of the fastest drivers out there. We really just go way too fast in the state. And if you ever want to do a speed test on your car, that section of 91 going north out of New Haven heading up to Hartford, it seems to be the international race zone. It's amazingly fast. Now, that's on a big highway, and, you know, that's somewhat safer because of that, but not really. Not really. Speed is what kills people. It's not the little minor fender benders that kill people or hurt people really badly. It's the speed that does it. And it really is the problem that we have with most of our vehicles right now. They just go way too fast. I'm driving in a car now, and it is it's an electric car. And I grew up in the 70s, 60s and 70s, and we had V8 engines and four-barrel carburetors and you know, the GTOs and the Camaros and all the just crazy fast cars, stupid fast cars. And my electric vehicle is way faster. It's like scary faster. Not that I have tested it very often, but it is, it certainly will get you out of the way very, very quickly. So, you know, speed is something that we just don't pay enough attention to. And it's kind of like, it's not the bicycle on the road that gets people hurt. It's not the car on the road that gets people hurt. It's the speed at which the car on the road is going that gets people hurt. And that's really unfortunate. But anyway, this is a great little, it's an information booklet, rules of the road understanding the rules of the road for cyclists as well as drivers. But they're really, the guide is for drivers, not for cyclists. So anyway, yay, Boston. Good for you guys. Good for getting involved in that. And shout out to Gavin and other people in Boston from my yesteryears when I was a rep on the road in the Boston area. So, yeah, it's a good thing. So where are we at here? Boy, we're getting close. Let me kick this one out. And here we go. It's working. The initial data shows that congestion pricing has stemmed the tide of years of increased traffic. I love this article. This is great. It is, you know, congestion pricing is a real nuisance to people that are in Manhattan every day and have to navigate around Manhattan every day. And it has caused a bit of a stir for sure. But travel times, get this. This is my favorite part of it. It's a subtitle on the article. Travel times are down an average of 34% across 8 bridges and tunnels into the central business district, which saw a 7.5% drop in overall traffic. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Stuck in traffic, you say? Put something like this out there, and maybe you'll have to think twice about going into your, you know, your busy, busy, busy downtown area. And it's interesting because you're going to, you know, you're going to cross over and they're going to take a photo of your license plate and they're going to know it was you and they're going to send you a bill or you're going to have a transponder on your car. I don't know exactly how they've done it, but the sign on the side of the road says toll congestion relief zone entrance. So, you know, it's West Street just outside a congested relief zone. So the first week of congestion pricing bucked years of a long trend of increased bridge and tunnel traffic into Manhattan's central business district. So morning commuter times last Wednesday, January 8th, is going back, well, that would be last Wednesday, January 8th, dropped year over year on every bridge tunnel into the tolling zone below 60th Street. The MTA told reporters on Monday, with an average drop of 34% between the 8 crossings. Numbers analyzed by StreetsBlog, this is the site that I'm getting this information from, buoy the MTA's rosy assessment. Number of vehicles in the Queens, Midtown, and Brooklyn battery tunnels, which, with the exception of the hardest years of pandemic, have trended up since 2018, dropped significantly in the first 5 weekdays of the new toll compared to the equivalent period last January. The Queens Midtown Tunnel hosted 199,057 vehicle crossings in the first 5 weekdays of the new toll, 6.6% fewer than last year and 5.3% fewer than 2018, going all the way back. It certainly seems like this is a step change difference. It's not just a small incremental reduction the way the last 10 years have seen small incremental increases. And this is from the MTA Deputy Chief of Policy and External Relations, Juliet Michelson. It's been a very good week here in New York. There's less traffic, quieter streets, and I think everybody's seen it. The MTA on Monday presented the initial data from the first week of the toll, with the caveat conditions that will likely evolve as time goes on, that showed 43,000 fewer vehicles entering the congestion relief zone compared to baseline of the previous 3-year drop at 7.5%. So you can see where I'm headed here. This is a show about bicycles. This is a show about alternative transportation. This is a show about maybe one less car on the road. And here it is. Here's how it begins to work. Why am I excited by this? I'm excited by this because it makes it safer on the roads for pedestrians and cyclists. And the less cars we have to deal with, the safer our roads and our journeys will be. So this is a great direction or indication in the get a clue, folks, that you know, we can do it better. We can do a better job. So the greatest improvements were on inbound river crossings, but travel times also dropped on most east-west two-way crosstown streets. Some north-south avenues, like the FDR Drive and West Side Highway in the evenings, which border but are not directly within the toll zone. So it even took down travel times on other areas that were not in that zone. How about that? Travel times are down even on the highways outside of the congestion relief zone. Some avenues, 2nd, 5th, and 9th, experienced 1% increases in travel times, which the MTA and city officials attributed to construction and other conditions unrelated to the new toll. The buses have also consistently seen high trip time reduction thanks largely to lighter traffic on the bridge and Tunnel River crossings. The B-39, which traverses the Williamsburg Bridge, had a 28% drop in travel time. That's a lot of time. Travel times on the SIM-24, which goes from Staten Island through New Jersey and to the Lincoln Tunnel into Manhattan, dropped 5.3%, or nearly 4 minutes, thanks entirely to faster travel times through the tunnel. We're seeing buses moving faster, especially in the morning peak, Mickelson told reporters. The buses are benefiting from those reduced trip times on the East River and to the Hudson River, particularly our express bus routes that utilize those crossings. It's great news for our express bus riders. It's also great for the New Jersey Transit riders. Contrary to New York Post's claims that, I'm not going to say that word, that the public transit has been packed because of the toll, the effects of drivers switching to transit are muted, Michelson said, with the exception of a slight increase in some express bus routes, possibly because of improved travel times. Even then, those buses remain well below the level of ridership that would require turning away passengers. So there's still plenty of room on the bus, too. You can still get into the city on the bus and not have to pay a penalty. So, you know, figure it out. These are easy adjustments to make. Further defying the Post's anti-congestion pricing campaign, the City of Department of Transportation has not seen any evidence of drivers parking just outside the toll zone and getting on transit to avoid paying the toll. So that's not even working there. A DOT official on hand for Monday's press briefing used the example of the daily backup on the Williamsburg Bridge to illustrate the toll's initial impact. Typically, Manhattan-bound traffic on the ridge backs up all the way back to the bridge tower on the Brooklyn side since congestion pricing launched, as the line of cars doesn't even reach the tower on the Manhattan side. MTA officials did not say on Monday how much money the $9 peak toll had raised to fund the authority's sorely needed capital investments. Those estimates should be available in a matter of weeks, not months, officials said. But much ballyhooed specter of toll scofflaws covering their license plates may have been overstated. Crossing data from the Queens Midtown Brooklyn Battery tunnels crunched by street blogs showed no increase in the number of drivers without Easy Pass, indicating that the new toll had not resulted in an increase of illegal license plate activity. Yeah, I saw a little piece on that somewhere. Anyway, congestion pricing's impact on Manhattan's streetscape and regional traffic in general has been easy to spot for New Yorkers driving, walking, biking, and taking transit into and within the Central Business District, as evidenced by MTA's numbers. The initial results inspired confidence for transit advocates. Seeing is believing, and the numbers don't lie. These axioms are proving true as data comes in the first week of congestion pricing, said Lisa Daiglin, Executive Director of Permanent Citizens Advisory Committee to the MTA, an advocacy group. Take a walk or ride into Midtown. There is less congestion, easier street crossings, and a sense of muted surprise from even the most jaded New Yorkers. The changes we're seeing in just 1 week border on epic, and it's just the beginning of a better future for our region. One caveat to the whole good news is that experts also predict a slight rebound in traffic once drivers see that they're getting a good value on the toll. And that's bringing us closer to the end of our show here, folks. I got a few more things I can talk about before we get there. But I'm just really inspired by something that was so incredibly fought against for so many years in New York City. And the first place I saw results on this was, get this, from the BBC. and they were talking about the positive action across the pond, is what they said, because they're doing this in Europe and it is making a difference. And, you know, Europe is yeah, they got a lot of cars, but they're also very bicycle oriented in Europe in a lot of the major cities. So this is a very, very big deal, and it is affecting a lot of people. So anyway, I'm very excited. And it's hopefully we're heading in a new direction here. There's also other things going on right now. Let's see, pop this guy up here. This is the National Association of City Transportation Officials launched a new urban bikeway design guide for the next generation of innovative cycling infrastructure. This was dated January 7th, 2025. And it's interesting. It's a very, very interesting read. And it talks a lot about how you can build urban bikeways in big cities. I'm sure transportation engineers all around are taking a good look at this, if not just basic traffic engineers in cities. Transportation engineering is a very soft subject in this country. We don't really look at transportation the same way as others do. But this is developed by cities, for cities, by cities. The Urban Bikeway Design Guide is a blueprint for changing decades-old practices on city streets. Endorsed by the U.S. Department of Transportation and recognized in federal law, the Urban Bikeway Design Guide, remember that, Urban Bikeway Design Guide, you can Google that, is used by hundreds of municipalities, state DOTs, regional agencies across the U.S. and Canada to design streets that are safe and accessible for people biking. Because of the Urban Bikeway Design Guide, treatments such as protected bike lanes are now commonplace across the U.S. and Canada. If you've got a big project going on in your town and there's going to be a big, you know, road development, or they're replacing sidewalks, or there's going to be a repaving of a main avenue that carries a lot of traffic on it, including bikes, this is the time to make a stand. This is the time to stand up at your local town meeting and say, hey, have we considered a protected bike lane? And here's why. And now there's lots of information online that you can bring. You can have, you can study it before you get there, and you can present to your towns your view on what you would like to see for your friends and families and neighbors out there that use bicycles. And the more people that use bicycles, the more people will use bicycles. That's a fact. It happens. That's it, folks. I'm running out of things to to tell you for this week, but there's always more here at Bicycle Talk. It's 2025. What's your plan? Where are you going with it? What are you going to do? Are you going to ride more miles? Are you going to ride and commute to work or around town? Are you looking for better fitness? It's that time of year. Everybody gets all freaked out about that. And we call it the resolutionists come out. Viva la resolution. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and just ride your bike, okay? And hey, take that pedal and run challenge. Consider parking your car or truck one day, just one day out of the week, and just use your bicycle instead. You might just surprise yourself. All right, so everybody out there, be safe, be kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or on the Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, just reach out to me with an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. saved mine. This is 91.7 WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.